And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. This is Tim Brion, Senior Vice President of TruSpec Golf, joined by the Managing Editor for Equipment from Golf.com, Jonathan Wall. Jonathan, we're both at home this episode. What's going on here?
Professor Brion, it's a whole lot of club tests for me. I'm trying to transition out of wrapping up a February issue and getting into the meat and potatoes of March club test. And as you well know, there's a lot to do, but always got to find a way to squeeze in a weekly fully equipped podcast and got a couple of fun topics to discuss this week.
That's right. We're going to discuss some golf balls for Dustin Johnson on this week's pod. Going to mention Rosie's new driver that he's testing out. Going to look at a mirror product, which is really cool and unique. Going to do a couple of mailbag questions. And then a couple weeks back, he had an opportunity, actually it was right after his win, of spending some time with Titleist staffer Tyler Duncan. So it should be a great pod. As we mentioned last week, you know, this time of year, the equipment front, it kind of gets a little bit, it's a little stagnant this time of year. That's going to end here right after we get out of Christmas season into the new product launch season. So, you know, when we're talking Dustin Johnson's golf balls, though, it's my understanding that he's got something new going in here, potentially at the President's Cup. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if Dustin is actually going to play this golf ball, but I did find it interesting that this week during practice rounds for the President's Cup, DJ was spotted using a TaylorMade TP5X Pix golf ball. And I'm sure, you know, the gearheads out there are familiar with Pix. It has the graphics. The graphics on this golf ball look a little bit like an X shape. It's just supposed to kind of help with visibility on the ball. And you know, we saw Ricky Fowler use it briefly during a practice round during the Players' Championship. But not a whole lot of traction for this golf ball when it's come to the competitive space, especially the PGA Tour. So maybe we see DG. Look, I mean, here's my thing, Tim. And I don't know. I'll kind of want to get your take on this too. But, you know, there's a possibility, I guess, that the DJ could use this golf ball. And this is the one with the stars and stripes. And it's a cool looking ball. Again, you know, the week of a team event. But I can't really see him using this golf ball in the foursomes format. You know, there is the potential that he could tee it up with another TaylorMade staffer. And this is, to me, being a gear nerd, this is one of my favorite things, is watching who Tiger is going to pair with each other. Is he going to pair Titleist guys together so they're using the same ball? If he doesn't, who's going to get kind of first pick at the golf ball that they're going to use in this foursomes format? Because again, they're going to be alternate shots. So they're going to have to use each other's golf ball. So is somebody really going to want to use a golf ball with graphics on it? I don't know. But again, kind of one of the cooler topics, I think, coming out of this week, at least from a gear perspective. What do you think?
Yeah, so the whole idea of graphics on golf balls to improve optics. You know, Callaway came out with that soccer ball looking
Truvis
pattern.
Yep,
a
Truvis.
Couple years back. Yep. Now they've got a new golf ball with another graphics package, which is more intended for alignment when it comes to putting. We've now seen this Pix concept with the TaylorMade golf ball. So we've got golf ball, you know, designers, we've got brands looking at golf ball design specifically for the graphic packages that they're using on the golf balls. For me, it's way too busy for me, to be quite honest. I like to see as little as possible when I'm looking down towards the golf ball. This simple brain can't take all those different graphics and all those different things to look at. I get too distracted. So I know that one of the principles behind these graphic, you know, golf balls is to train the eye to look at a really specific place or segment or quarter of the ball, so to speak. But once again, for me, if I was playing in a team match with a player that was using a golf ball that had all these different graphics, I probably would get distracted. I probably would definitely throw a couple jabs during the round about their busy golf ball. So probably not for me, but that's just personal preference. I do understand and think that there is some technical merit in some of these designs. You know, Jonathan, Would you entertain? Well, we all know that you find your golf balls in the woods anyway. So
there it is. Know. There it is. I was waiting for it.
I had to throw that jive out there. So
now, I mean,
you know, have you found? Let me ask you this: have you found any graphic golf balls out in the woods these days?
I've found golf balls with graphics that I probably can't talk about on this podcast because they're a little bit not safe for work.
It.
Yeah, people draw some interesting things on their golf balls. Let me just put it that way. But no, I don't think I'm kind of like you. I don't play golf balls with any sort of graphics on them unless I'm out of golf balls on the golf course. When in that case, all bets are off. So yeah, I
can't wait till we play golf. First time I see you go ball hawking. I tell you what,
just take a video of me doing it, man.
If I see you go ball hawking in a round of golf that we play, I am getting you a ball retriever.
I thought you were going to say you're going to go like live on Instagram so that you could follow my travails through the desert as I was searching for golf balls.
That was a given. I would blow you up on social media if you go ball hawking in the woods. But you know, have you ever played one of these products that have these graphic packages to enhance alignment?
I have. You know, I've played the TrueViz. And, you know, I think the one thing that I do like about that ball is the fact that when you hit, especially a wedge shot, you can see based on how the ball is turning, how it's spinning. And I kind of like being able to kind of know if the ball is spinning a little bit off for a hook or a slice. So that to me is something that I do enjoy about the TrueViz product. You know, I've tried the triple track again. I can't get used to it. And here's one of the funny things, even when it comes to putting, I don't even like to use the alignment aid. I actually line the ball up with the white space going up. I don't like having something kind of helping me point myself in that direction. I like to kind of feel it. So yeah, I'm not that kind of guy. This product is not for me, but I know a lot of people that do really enjoy it.
So you mentioned the golf ball and the alignment aid. There was a lot of research done in this actually by my good friend David Orr. We had him on the pod the last couple of episodes actually, and when he was looking at the alignment packages of lines and dots and all the different things that go into putters, one of the things he also looked into was the alignment package as far as graphics on golf balls, and pretty interesting findings based upon his research. What combination do you think ended up helping the most amount of golfers with the best alignment features at impact? Is it alignment line on the golf ball and an alignment line on the club head? Is it alignment line on the golf ball and no alignment line on the club head? Is it alignment line on the club head and no alignment line on the ball? Or is it no lines anywhere?
I was going to say no line anywhere.
So the best combination was when it was the largest the largest proportion of players lined their club face up most squarely when using a graphic alignment aid on the ball and a sight dot on the top line of the putter.
Golfers are just
and he calls
crazy.
He calls it dotting the eye. That's what he calls it.
Yeah,
so
I like
when
it.
when you use a dot on the top line of the club in conjunction with a alignment line on the golf ball, that's what he calls dotting the eye, and that was the combination of lines, dots, etc. that ended up doing the best for alignment with golfers. Kind of interesting.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, that would not have been my first choice.
Yep, it wouldn't have been mine either. So with that, let's get into our second tour topic for the week, which is Rosie's new driver. What's going on with the driver?
Yeah, you know, again, kind of what we've mentioned here in the last few weeks, this is the time of the year where if you're going to test new product, you're going to see players start to roll out, you know, prototypes that they're eventually going to become into retail, but we still call them prototypes for the time being. And this one from that Justin actually used at the Hero World Challenge, it's the first time I've seen it. It's a Hanma. It's called the TR20. New prototype club. Actually noticed that it has a new Mitsubishi Diamante D Plus Limited, I believe it's the 70TX that he's been using, the shaft. He was using a TPT shaft most recently. And you know, look, new drivers, you can usually see the changes pretty quickly when you look at the sole. And there is one noticeable change that I picked up on with this TR20 compared to the TW747 that he was using for most of 2019. And that was just the addition of a weight port in the heel. So it looks like they're going to be given golfers the option to kind of work on cleaning up that slice. I'm not sure that's something that Justin ever really has to worry about, but again, something that the recreational golfer might be able to get a benefit out of. 460 and 440 cc are what I saw on the USGA's conforming driver list. So it looks like, Justin, I know, and you know this too, Tim, he's kind of bounced between that 460 head, which is the standard head shape, and that 440 as well. Yeah, sometimes he likes a little bit of a smaller profile. So curious to see which one he ends up in the end with. But yeah, again, not a whole lot going on with this driver. I really like the look of it. It's kind of got a black section, probably about 80% of it. And then it looks like it's got a little bit of a steel piece there closer around the face. So kind of a two-tone look, and it definitely pops. So curious to see again which one Rosie ends up with. But yeah, it looks like Hanma's got something in the works. And I would assume, and this is just me kind of knowing Rosie and the fact that he joined Hanma this year, I would guess that he probably had a lot more feedback and input on this driver than he did the first one when he was just rolling off of a deal with TaylorMade and starting to work with Hanma on the new product.
Yeah, and whenever we're talking about a player with a brand for, so many years, how many years was JR with TaylorMade?
It was like 20. I mean, 20 years. I think it was close to 20. Basically, since he turned pro. I think it was when he turned pro.
Right.
I think he was with TaylorMade the entire time.
Yeah, I think that's the only equipment brand up until the Hanma deal that he had his entire career. So you get very acclimated to a certain look and acoustic signature and feel. Obviously, from one year to the next, you may have some breakthrough technologies. When you're talking about going from the R series into the SLDR products, that was a very different product. But by and large, going from one iteration to the next, you'll see nominal improvements. And then every 2, 3, 4 years, you'll see a little bit bigger step forward. But the general design principles tend to stay the same with a brand throughout, all the different products that they design. If it's a brand that really focuses on consistency and accuracy, you're going to see that through all of their designs, year after year.
Right.
If it's a brand that really focuses on ball speed or something along those lines and distance, then that's going to be part of the culture. So when you start to acclimate your golf swing around a certain set of products and you spend almost 20 years or around 20 years, playing one brand's products, it can definitely be an adjustment period. We've mentioned this before on the pod about folks that switch brands later in their career, specifically later in their career, and they struggle a little bit to adjust. I do know that, largely Justin has been very happy with the gear that he's played so far this year.
Yeah, his numbers dropped off a little bit, Tim. I mean, if we're being honest, and I agree with you, there is an adjustment period, and I do think for somebody like Justin who has been with one manufacturer for so long, it's going to take some time to get acclimated. Almost right out of the gates, he starts the season in Palm Springs, then goes and tees it up at Torrey and wins. So I think that kind of validated the signing. But if you look at the stats, he putted out of his mind with that Axis One putter this past season. And I think that may have kind of masked some of the issues that he had with maybe getting acclimated with some of the product. But again,
if there's one piece of product I would say that's been more of a challenge than the rest, I would say it's probably been the driver from feedback that I've received. And
right. Yeah. I know
so
he's been working a lot
to see another driver go in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not surprising to see another driver, up for, as a candidate to go into the bag. When you look at Hanma, it should be an easy transition for Justin when you consider that, John Khawaja was part of the TaylorMade team underneath Mark King, during TaylorMade's heyday. Now, a lot of us know that Mark King has moved on from the golf industry, but John ended up taking over the the head spot over at Hamna. And there are quite a few other TaylorMade team members, former TaylorMade team members, when you're looking at marketing and fitting and, you know, the different product design. So they have a lot of the folks that Rosie would be familiar with from his days working with TaylorMade. So it wouldn't be surprising at all to see that this driver is a significant improvement over what he had been using throughout this year. It'll be great fun to follow the progress of that and see how he gets back on top. I mean, just from the different work that I've been privileged to have done with him in the past, we're talking about one of the best ball-striking specimens out on the PGA Tour. It's almost robotic-like when he's on, watching him hit shots. So, you know, if you combine the level of putting that he's exhibited over the last 18 to 24 months with that characteristic, you know, Justin Rose ball-striking ability, you could see him return to number one in the world here, you know, in spots in 2020.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm in agreement with you. I always kind of figured that the clubs would take some time. I mean, look, he was kind of chomping at the bit to get that Axis One in the bag. And I think he showed everybody why, just based on the way he putted for most of the season. He was putting out of his mind. So, no, but I am kind of curious to see, especially now with kind of the year two product coming out for Hanma on the tour side. Really interested to see what kind of feedback Justin had on the design of those products. So it should be a fun 2020 for Hanma.
Have you seen the driver?
I mean, I've other than
in person yet.
No, I mean, I have. This is literally the first time that I've seen this new
TR20. Wow, I get to see a product before you. That's amazing. I'm actually going to see the driver tomorrow, I think it is.
Oh man. I probably should have just said, yeah, I already saw it, but because now I know you're going to be able to one-up me on that. All right, let's get on to the next topic.
Mura, Link Soul Irons. This is a really cool concept here, very outside-the-box thinking. You know a little bit more about what the initiative is here, but let's let our listeners know what Mura is up to.
Yeah, I really like this design. And look, this is not going to be a product that's going to be for everybody. And I'm not saying that because this is a traditional blade product, but it's kind of a cool story. So Mura partnered to do a little bit of a collaboration with Link Soul, an apparel company. And it just so happens that Jeff Cunningham, who's one of their co-founders along with John Ashworth, he, about 10 years ago, had a buddy who color-coded the front chords of his guitar instead of labeling them by letter. And he thought, like, what if I did this to a set of irons? What if I removed the numbers and used a color-coded system instead? So he decided to do it to just a short set, 7 irons. And kind of really fell in love with this idea of not having numbers and kind of removing some of that, you know, traditional side of the iron process where you stamp a number or maybe even a loft on there and just kind of go and make it more about the feel. And so now they're again with this partnership with Mura, they have the Color Theory irons. There's just 4 irons in this set. And I think this is a great option for those that play a Sunday bag. And by Sunday bag, I mean the bags that you carry, just the really lightweight. Some of them even have a single strap. Some guys carry, you know, 7 or 8 clubs in the bag. And, it, you know, when you do that, you're adding larger gaps to your set. But you bring a lot of the feel and the flight into play. And I think, honestly, and I don't know, Tim, I'll be curious to hear what you have to say about this. But I kind of like playing with short sets at time because it does kind of bring a lot of the brings a lot of that feel back into the equation because you're having to hit little half and three quarter shots, and especially when you're in between clubs. So, you know, 4 clubs is not a lot, and these clubs are going to be 25, 32, 40, and 49 degrees. So basically 5, 7, 9 and like a gap wedge. And they're going to be they have colored dots on the bottom. The long iron is going to be a red dot. Mid is going to be yellow. Short's turquoise, and the scoring club is purple. And I tell you, the one thing I love the most about these irons isn't so much the concept of the dots. It's the fact that they left the back of the heads blank. These could be my favorite looking irons, and I haven't even seen them in person yet. but they just look so...
What are they modeled off of? Have you seen that? What head are they modeled off of? Obviously, we've got the 101, we've got the 201, which will be coming out next
year. Yeah, they've definitely got a 101 profile to them, being a very traditional muscle back profile. But they just look just drop dead sexy to me without any sort of stamping. They only stamped the Mira logo and the Linksole logo on the sole, and yep. There's the colored dot. But yeah, the rest of the iron is just as clean can be. So I love them. And again, really like the idea for those that out there that are minimalists. I think this is a great option if you've got a Sunday bag. They don't come cheap, $1,300 for four irons. So, You really have to like the idea of having a minimalist bag.
So with Mira, you know, you're talking about a forging process that's very unique and proprietary. That's going to produce, you know, an iron that doesn't have any hot spots. It's fairly consistent across the face. We're talking spin welded, you know, hosels, which is going to allow them to go through their proprietary four strike process. So you're talking about ultimate craftsmanship. You're talking about a unique design process that's going to yield an iron that, you know, really feels and performs differently than most of everything that's available these days. And then you combine it with, you know, this Linksole, you know, aspect where they're thinking outside the box as far as the way that they present those irons. I like the four club set. Obviously, if you're talking 5, 7, 9 and gap wedge, you know, something that my college coach used to make all of us do is he'd make us play with, you know, all the evens or all the odds one day. And you'll find that your shot making capabilities definitely increases significantly when you're having to manufacture different, you know, flighted products, or excuse me, different flighted launches, different spin rates, all of the above. So, you know, this is something that is really... it's a unique idea. I haven't seen this before. Have you ever seen a manufacturer go this route and think outside the box in this way?
Yeah, and I think that's why I love it. Is just the fact that it's just different. And I might, you know, I might use something like that again, just to kind of get out of using a traditional set. Four irons is a small number of irons, so you know, you're going to have something there at the top of the set that is going to be different from these color theory irons. And, you know, maybe you have a driving iron or something a bit more forgiving there to fill that gap before you go into the metal wood. But yeah, I love the idea. Never seen it before. And again,
as long as you're not walking through the woods looking for golf clubs, I'm fine with it.
Get out of here. I'm ready to eject out of this podcast now. Let's go. Mailbag questions. Come on, Tim.
All right, so mailbag for the week. Oh, geez.
You are just needling me today, man. I guess maybe I deserve it from time to time.
I got to sleep in my own bed for the first time in 3.5 weeks.
That's what happens.
I got some rest, so I got some fire, man.
Jeez. Okay, come on, mailbag questions. Let's get to it.
Mailbag. Chris Walsh asks, what is the favorite club you've used in the last decade? I'm going to let you go first, and I'll mention mine. What's yours, Jonathan?
I'll go Callaway X-Forge 2013.
That's a good one.
Loved those irons. It had more grooves on the face. I always felt like those irons, especially out of the rough, that club was just so good. And I actually had a couple sets of those. And I don't know. Maybe I would say it's probably maybe the best iron that I've ever hit. I would find it difficult to find somebody that would be as good as that one. So yeah, I'll say it. X4 2013, best irons I've ever hit. And it just so happens that it was in the last decade. Cleanest look that I've seen from an iron in a while. It just had the small Callaway stamp and the X in the cavity. I still sometimes when I'm not hitting it great with the irons, I just think about pulling a set out and throwing them back in the bag. But yeah, what about you, Tim?
Burner, so TaylorMade Burner super fast 2.0 TP driver.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one.
I sold mine. Man, that's the worst decision I've ever made in golf.
You know, there's this thing, Tim, called eBay. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before.
It's not the same, though. I will never get
it. Here we go.
That's exactly
here we
the
go.
Same. Number one, I'm convinced that this club was non-conforming. I know it was non-conforming because the amount of yardage I picked up switching to this golf club, it was kind of silly. I never hit it left, ever. You know that did you know the original batch of those heads was supposed to be like 3 degrees open, but the original batch was actually they didn't produce those correctly, and I believe that they were either 2 or 3 degrees more open than intended.
That's wild.
And yeah, so this was extremely I'd never heard that. Push. Yeah, the original batch of those heads, if I'm not mistaken, was significantly more open than they intended those clubs to be designed. So, you know, it was very, very push or fade biased, incredibly hot, you know, great ball speeds, great spin characteristics, unbelievably forgiving. It had a great feel. It had a great look. I honestly don't know who I sold it to, when I sold it, and how much I sold it for, but give it back if you're
probably
listening.
Brant Snedeker.
Yeah, well, as you know, he's been trying to replace that driver for quite a long time. I think he ended up finding a couple of options that were about the same. But in any event, that driver for me just did it. I had a, at the time, it was a Matrix shaft. It was an Atrix 8, or no, it was a 7M3 extra stiff flex that I put in there. And I had never driven the ball as well as I did with that golf club. So that would have to be my favorite club. You know, this brings something up, actually. Before the end of the year, I'd love to do a best of the decade episode.
We're going to get there.
Listeners out there. Yeah, I think so. I think we need to do a best of each category for the decade before we put a bow tie onto 2019 and in this decade. So with that, let's get into second question. At JDPJDP88. Wow, that's a tongue full there. Which new clubs that you tested are going to really surprise people, good or bad? I'm going to stay away from the politics of the bad answer here. I will answer to start off as far as the best, most surprising products. I would say...
Let me give you my answer first while you're thinking about
yeah,
yours.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've talked about this product already ad nauseum, but I'll still go back
you're
to the well.
Steal it on me, I know.
Yeah, I'll go Cobra King Speed Zone. You know that driver to me. And look, you can have the same answer. There's nothing wrong with that here, but again, because I think it's such a good product, but the numbers that we saw, it wasn't even, you know, people always talk about like it's a good product because it's got, you know, high ball speed and the ball goes far. For me, that's not the case with this one. It's because it was so darn consistent on miss hits. I was like literally tapping the screen as we were testing this club. I couldn't believe how good it was. The deltas between the toe hits and the center hits, we're almost identical. It's crazy how good this driver is. And again, you know, Cobra's come out with some really good products recently, but man, that Speed Zone product for me just absolutely nailed it. And I think that was the one. I knew it was going to be a good product, but I wasn't quite sure how it was going to live up to how good F9 was, and it was better. And I think for me, that's when I realized that Cobra's doing something special right now with their Metalwoods. And this Speed Zone product is really something that I think everybody could benefit from.
For me, it's going to be Wilson D7 in the driver.
That was my second option.
I was going to go with Speed Zone, but I can't agree with you. I mean, I can't just mail it in and say Speed Zone as well, because there are so many great products that we tested, so many ones that were eye-opening and surprising. So I would say that the D7 product, number one, the aesthetic is amazing. I mean, every single good player that we put the D7 in front of in the player test portion, they all said, wow, we really love the look of this. And then they flipped it over and saw the brand and product name. We're like, wow, we weren't expecting that. We weren't expecting this to be a Wilson product. Not that there's a stereotype or, you know, profile that everybody's accustomed to seeing out of Wilson driver products, but I don't think that they were, you know, prepared to see the lines, you know, from the address position that they have in these D7 products. And then from the performance standpoint, it's a bonded driver. So, I mean, you don't have all of the adjustments, all the bells and whistles that some of these other products have available these days to tune it in. And, you know, I will say this, the D7 driver, hands down, was the best performing bonded driver I saw. Both in the robot room and I believe in the player test. And just the overall look, the shape, the acoustics, you know, for those folks out there that have not given Wilson a fair shot, I think you definitely should when it comes to this D7 product and their driver especially.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. All right, let's get to this week's interview. I recently had the opportunity to talk to 2019 RSM Classic winner Tyler Duncan. And he had a lot to say. You know, one of the interesting things about Tyler is he was the very first player to win with Titleist Vokey SM8 wedges. The very first week that they are out on tour, we talked for a while about what he really liked about that wedge and why he was surprised that he put him in play the very first week, because that's not something that he typically does. Also touched on his transition from TaylorMade to Titleist and how he goes about driver testing. Enjoy the interview. Hey, congratulations on your win at RSM.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, Charles Howell III made the jump to Titleist and immediately won the 2018 RSM. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you were a TaylorMade staffer last year. What was behind your decision to make the switch to Titleist in 2019?
The golf ball was a big, big part of it. So I've always played the Titleist golf ball. And I think it's the best ball in golf, and it's something that you use on every shot. And TaylorMade was kind of making a push to get the golf ball in all of their staffers' hands, and so that was a big part of it. I didn't really feel comfortable switching to the golf ball, and the driver honestly was a big part of that as well. So I usually like to play a left to right shot off the tee most of the time. But with the TS2, it gave me the option to be able to draw it off the tee as well.
How much easier is it for you when you're having to essentially overhaul your entire setup, but you have the golf ball as the one constant as you're testing new equipment?
It makes it so much easier. If you're trying to test different equipment and different golf balls, it's hard to have a baseline and know where you're at. But at least with the golf ball, I'm very comfortable with it, and I know exactly how it should fly and how I want it to fly. And so then it makes testing, you know, a little bit easier for sure, because you already have that baseline of what you're looking for.
You mentioned the driver was a really important part of your switch. What is driver testing like for Tyler Duncan? What are you looking at? Are you a numbers guy, or are you looking more for flight and feel? What's that process like for you when you're working into a new driver?
I do a little bit of both. It seems like a lot of times when you work strictly off the numbers, it works out where low spin is better. But I've learned over the years that low spin for me isn't great. So I try to get it to spin, you know, on a lower spinning shot and, you know, 2400 in a normal shot, 2500. So it's kind of in the mid 2000s on spin, which might be a touch high for some players, but I feel like that allows me to hit it straighter, and my misses are much better.
I noticed you have a Titleist U500 two iron in the bag, which came out earlier this year. Have you always been a utility iron guy? Have you tried hybrids in the past? Kind of where do you stand on the utility iron versus hybrid?
I haven't really used a hybrid probably since college. I've been using a driving iron for the last, I'd say, 4 years probably at least. I just really like having that off the tee. I feel like for myself, hybrids, I can start hitting a little crooked. But the two iron, you know, the driving irons off the tee, I hit much straighter. And as long as you can find one that you can launch where you can hit it in the greens, then that's when you've really found the right one. And lucky for me, I've been able to find one. And the new U500 is unbelievable. A little less offset, so it looks cleaner. And it launches high, and it feels great. So I've been very happy with it.
I noticed you put the new Vokey Design SM8 wedges in the bag last week. I believe it was the 54 and the 58. Did you plan on putting them in the bag when you saw them for the first time? I know they came out at Sea Island. And how long did it take for you to get comfortable with those new wedges?
Yeah, so I honestly wasn't planning on putting them in play. I don't like to switch much, and I was hitting them on the range. And that one thing I've been trying to do is flight my wedges a little bit lower. and immediately the launch came down. The spin stayed up, or maybe even a little bit more, but with the lower launch and the way it went through the turf was awesome. And then we went out and played the practice round on Tuesday, and I did a lot of chipping with them, and it just seemed awesome the way it was coming off the face and going through the ground, and all the different chip shots and full wedge shots.
Would you think of the new look? I know the SM8 has a little bit of a cosmetic change from the way the SM7 looked.
I love the way they look. The back part of it, the design there looks awesome. Whatever design they did in there, the little part that they had up there on the toe that you could see made it look a little thicker. And now with the new design, it has a little thinner top line, and they did an awesome job.
What kind of grinds are you using on those two wedges? And did the grinds stay the same from what you were using with SM7?
Yes, the grinds are still the same. I believe it is the L grind on the 58.
Okay.
And the M grind on the 54.
I know some players will get a specific grind, and then they'll do a little bit of work, they'll have wedge extraordinaire Aaron Dill do the work. Do you have any subtle changes that you make to the overall grind, or when you get those wedges, are they pretty stock to you?
The grinds are stock to the way they come. The only thing that I've done differently is the 58 is bent to a 59. Just for kind of yardage gap reasons, and then also for the bounce.
You mentioned that you're not a guy who likes to change gear all that often. How frequently do you change golf clubs? I know some guys are okay with doing it year to year. Where do you kind of fall on that?
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't like to make many changes. It just kind of depends. If something doesn't seem like it's flying quite right, then that's kind of when I'll make my change. Last year at Travelers on Tuesday, my 3-wood didn't seem to be flying quite right. And I was using an old 3-wood at the time. And I figured it was just me. And we got to the range on Wednesday afternoon and hit some shots. And I was like, this isn't right. Something's wrong. So I had my caddy run up to the Titleist equipment van, and clearly they hadn't fully packed up yet. And JJ gave him, I think it was two different 3-woods and a couple different shafts, and brought them down. And I hit them on the range, and I found the one that I liked, and I've been playing it ever since. It's probably the best club in my bag.
You mentioned going to the truck. I remember a story Max Homa told me about spending basically his first year on tour, and he rarely went to the truck, and he actually found out that some of his gear was a little bit off spec-wise, and he started to blame himself. How much time are you spending in the truck, and how much do you rely on guys like JJ to make sure that your gear is in, you know, dialed in good working order?
I'll have my putter checked, the loft and lie checked, every couple weeks, probably at least, just depending on how it's feeling. Maybe every week, just depends. And then lofts and lies, I'll get checked every once in a while. I'll check those at home sometimes too. But woods and stuff, I don't have those. They're checking the faces just to make sure we don't have any issues with them not passing the new conforming test.
Right.
So they're keeping an eye on that stuff. But yeah, they're not a whole lot of time in the equipment trailers.
I saw you've got a pretty classic 009 Masterful as your putter. Have you always been kind of an answer style guy?
I've used that putter most of the time. I used it when I first got on the PGA Tour. And then the last year or so, I've actually putted with a mallet, and I switched to this 009 the week before the Korn Ferry Finals.
Was there any particular reason why you made the switch?
My putting stats hadn't been great. I felt like I'd been improving, but nothing crazy was going on. And I was kind of between a mallet and a blade, and I was out at TPC Sawgrass putting. And one of my buddies was like, you need to putt with that blade putter. It just looks like it fits you. And so I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. And I took it to Columbus, the first Korn Ferry event, and played okay, and then ended up locking up my card. So I have a feeling this one's going to be around for a while.
All right, dig deep for me here. What is or was your favorite club growing up as a kid? Putter, driver, you name it. What's your favorite?
My favorite club growing up.
I know. I'm forcing you to dig deep here, man.
Yeah. it was probably my putter. I had a couple different putters that were hand-me-downs from my uncle who played on tour. But I just, you know, a lot of my memories as a kid were just having putting contests with my buddies out at the course all day. We just had so many putting contests, and that was just part of the fun.
All right, two pieces of advice for the average golfer. The first one I want to ask you is, if you were going to tell the average golfer to work on one part of their game more than any other, what would you suggest they spend their time on if they've got free time on the range?
I would probably say putting. I think a lot of times where the amateurs struggle with their handicap is they make a lot of triples and quads and that kind of stuff. So as long as when you get it out of play, you can get it back in play, I think that's one of the biggest things that they can do to lower their scores for sure.
And the second piece of advice I wanted to see if you could give the average golfer is, if they're going out and testing drivers, what's the one thing they need to be mindful of as they're testing the big stick?
I think don't always look at the numbers. Look at what fits your eye and kind of what you're hitting straight, because what I've learned is when you get on the golf course, it's a whole lot different than hitting in front of a launch monitor. So I think whatever you can do that feels and looks the best to you is probably best.
Yeah, that actually leads me to a really good follow-up question. It's something you said right there, which is, you know, I know launch monitors are prevalent out on the PGA Tour. Do you find it difficult to not want to take a peek at the numbers and see what's going on there? Or is it pretty easy for you to just rely on your feel and what you're seeing?
I think launch monitor is important. I think it's important to have that data and have access to that data. But I don't think I don't think you have to use a certain club or something based on the numbers. I think it's important to know where you're at and know what you like and then kind of go from there.
Awesome. Tyler, hey, thanks again and congratulations on your win.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And many thanks to Tyler Duncan for spending time with us on the pod this week. For all you folks out there who may want to get a look at our social pages, we always have fresh content up. My handle on Twitter is @ClubWhisperer. On Instagram, it's Tim_Breon78. And for Jonathan on both platforms, it's @JonathanRWall. Thanks for tuning in. That's a wrap for episode 22. See you next week.